You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Now we can make that difference. A lot of great work.
This is the Gaffer and Hooligan Podcast. Discussions, debates, and opinions on Major League Soccer and the CONCACAF region from a Canadian perspective. Hosted by Kamal Hilton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gaffer and Hooligan, available on Red Nation Online, War Room Sports Podcast Network, and FatsRadio.com. I'm your host, Kamal Hilton, joined by my co-host, Aaron Nielsen, and a special guest of the podcast, Eastside Stand-Up's Ian Clark. How's it going, guys?
Good.
Yeah, going pretty good.
Yeah, this is actually a memorable podcast, I think it's going to be. Both A, where we're recording, because this is probably the strangest place we've recorded the podcast, in the middle of an elevator lobby of your building, Ian. But also, this is the 1 year anniversary of Gaffer and Hooligan. This time, I think this exact day last year was we were all together watching MLS Cup, and that's when we did episode one.
Yeah, I mean, we were going to try to do it at the pub, too loud, and then we were going to go do it in the park.
Too cold.
And then we're left with, only option left was coming into the building and finding a spot here. We made it happen.
Yeah, so nobody can question our dedication trying to get you this podcast. But just to go over a little bit of what we're going to talk about, we had a few things planned, but basically I think we're going to stick to focusing on the game itself and different things we noticed throughout. And also, if we have time and we want to touch on what happened at halftime, the folks at ESPN spoke to Don Garber, and he touched on a variety of topics there. Maybe a few things we want to touch on. But let's focus on the game first. Throw it to you first, Ian. What were your general impressions of the game?
Well, I think probably most people were in the camp that for probably, 110 minutes, it was a pretty boring game. Wasn't too much to get excited about, save for a few moments of action where we got the two goals. But I kind of thought that the last 10 minutes made up for, which was going to look like it was going to be going to a shootout and kind of feeling like a repeat of last year's MLS Cup final. And that was the thing that I was probably the most worried about, that it was kind of falling down the same route that the 2013 final went in, with not a lot of action and just going to a penalty kicks. So I was kind of happy that actually it went to Robbie Keane scoring that goal and the way that it broke down, and then New England not folding and really putting a lot of pressure at the end. At least that last 5-10 minutes was actually exciting football.
Yeah, what do you think, Aaron?
I would basically agree with that. I thought the game, I thought at the beginning of the game, I thought Los Angeles had some good pressure, and I thought the same. I thought they were going to play out the extra time for penalty kicks, and we'll just have a wins penalty kicks basically would win it. So, yeah, no, you always want the game to be, you don't want the game to go to penalty kicks, even if it is Robbie Keane and LA winning.
Yeah, I was hoping for a way more exciting game than what we got, particularly because I picked New England to win it, and I thought they had a pretty exciting team throughout the season with a lot of different types of players. And then you had LA Galaxy, the veterans, and their strive for five, and Landon Donovan's storyline, and Robbie Keane, and just all that in one combination. I thought it was going to be a better game. First half was complete garbage, to be honest with you. There wasn't anything to talk about. But I would say LA shaded the first half, and then second half, it didn't explode to life, but I would say one thing that stood out to me was New England kind of trying to push the ball out to the wings a little bit. One thing that comes to mind is Teal Bunbury shot off the crossbar, and the goal they scored was worked on the wing. You had Patrick Mullins, who came off the bench, feeding the ball to Chris Tierney, and I think their wing play was something that kind of stood out to me a little bit.
Yeah, I think that probably one the matchups of this game was pretty interesting, and it's interesting that you actually highlighted one area of the pitch for New England was having a lot of success, which was the exact side that LA was having lots of success.
With
Zardes against Farrell, as well as Mullins on that side, working against I guess it was Gonzalez was the first goal there.
Yeah. Well, and it also says that you know, any TFC fan will know what Farrell and Zardes mean from the draft. And this year, Zardes, and even at that point, I thought Zardes was the top better prospect than Farrell. But, you know, in the first story to get here, you know, to use Encompass players who are originally from the draft from 2 years ago and have them as key players in this game says a lot. And, you know, it was interesting they're up against each other, and that played a factor in the game, including the Los Angeles goal.
And then looking at players that either stood out positively or negatively, I know throughout the game you were commenting on one player in particular that had a really negative game.
Yeah, well, I thought, you know, to be fair, I thought down the stretch he kind of played quite a bit better, but, you know, they really hyped this matchup as being Jermaine Jones was the main key player for New England against whether it's Robbie Keane or Landon Donovan of Los Angeles. And I thought for the most part, Jermaine Jones had a pretty poor game, especially in possession and distribution. I mean, there were some simple plays and simple passes that he just didn't seem in sync with the players around him. And I thought from a player of what you would expect from his caliber and his pedigree, a lot better quality in passing the ball.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I also think Donovan had even though at the end of the game, there, you know, Donovan's cup and stuff like that, I thought him during the game was quite quiet and not as effective. And I thought, again, I thought it was the capabilities of these younger players who, not only this game, but says to this complete season for both teams, right? You cannot win MLS just on one or two performances from players. You need the whole team. You need, you know, certain assets all through the lineup.
Yeah, I would say a couple of players that stood out to me on each team. You already mentioned one, Jesse Sardes. Not only because he scored the goal, but like you were saying, he tormented Andrew Farrell. I think he spun him around one time and like he couldn't find where he was at all. And then I know Taylor Twellman kept commenting that the gap between AJ Soares and Andrew Farrell just kept getting wider and wider and wider. And that was because of Zardes. But the other player was that kind of negatively, and partially it's not his fault because he just wasn't getting the ball enough in dangerous areas, was Lee Wynn. I think he could have really, if they were going to win, he would have had to been the player to like pull the strings a lot. And he just wasn't able to do that. And then he went off injured, which kind of, I think, killed their hopes.
Yeah, I think also that probably you need to give credit to Los Angeles in that part too, because, I mean, Taylor Twellman made the comments through the show that, you know, the service isn't getting up to the players up top, to Bunbury and Davies. And I think a lot of that had to do with Los Angeles just locking down the defense and not allowing Wynn to kind of run rampant in the middle of the park. They were smart. They didn't back off too far. They kept the pressure on him and just didn't allow him to have the space to operate, which he probably had, or we would have seen at least here in Toronto through the season. That was part of why he had such a successful season.
Well, also with New England, when they were successful, I think they did use some more. They didn't rely on just those two guys for their midfield. You know, Fagundes didn't play today, which I thought was a mistake because I think he adds something to the game. I thought Rowe had times in the game where he was effective, but also times in the game where he was completely quiet. And that's the problem, you know. Certainly the team, you know, record-wise, New England's been better since they had Jones. But when you do have these DPs or the pressure that Wynn has now on him, you know, as the potential MVP, as a guy who might be going to the EPL, you know, one of the things you see commonly in soccer, especially when I rate college players, is pressure gets onto people. And it's almost a case of trying too much, where it's no longer a team sort of going for the goal or whatever. It's the individual. And if you saw New England's goal, you know, it was, you know, Tierney's a good player. He's been with New England for many, many years. Mullen's a rookie, but he, you know, has some quality. But, you know, their play together was you know, they weren't going for a personal gain. They were just trying to generate a goal together and stuff like that. And I think, you know, that's when New England's been the most exciting all the years, when, because they have such great depth. So when the team sort of plays together, opposed to individuals trying to shine.
Yeah, you know what, Kamal, I just wanted to add on to your point about Zardes too, is I thought you could say about his performance, I thought it was actually very mature, performance for a guy who's played as well as he did this season, who has every reason probably to have a big head. I thought he played like a really like cohesive team game in terms of not hogging the ball. Like he was playing with his back to goal and laying the ball off to his midfielders or his attacking midfielders. Every time the ball came to him, it wasn't just him trying to beat his guy 1v1, which is something you see a lot of times with these sort of young superstar players that are emerging, is they try to think they can do it themselves. And maybe you have someone like Keenan Donovan keeping him in check.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think that's worth noting, that that was the kind of performance that he put in for a guy that young. And with that much talent, I thought he played a really mature outing for a cup final.
And here I thought Kamal liked him because he just wanted to copy his haircut. But
yeah, I'm not into the Wesley Snipes look. I'm not gonna go for that. But one question that popped in my mind was something that we actually discussed last year during the MLS Cup final, and that was, what does this final mean for MLS as a whole? And I think the consensus we came from last year was it was two small market teams, and it showed that you don't need to have all these huge name players, and if you grow your own talent, that's a way to win a championship. And I think Sporting Kansas City showed that last year. So I'll start with you, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think this MLS Cup final means for MLS?
Well, I think in many ways it says similar things, because one of the things about both these teams, even though they both have more money than Kansas City and possibly Real Salt Lake, is depth, right? And especially with New England, for New England this has been a sort of 2-3 year process where they've collected these players, and you know, we were even looking at the players sitting on the bench, you never got a chance to come into the game, like, for goodness, and just showed the depth that they had on this team. And in a case, you know, that's true with Los Angeles as well. You know, you get caught up with the Keens and the Donovans and things like that, but their ability to get players like Gordon, who they got at the end of the year, and they do have a lot of rookies, and, you know, of course, they have the LA Galaxy too, so they have a lot more rookies coming in. So, again, it's strong back office management, and, you know, and I think it's not surprising that both these teams are in the final, and both these teams are potentially strong teams in the MLS.
Yeah, and I think as much as I liked last year's final, and I think I sort of thought that was a really great thing for the league, you know, when you talk about, you know, world football and you look at the leagues through Europe and whatnot, and you have teams that are dominating, and people are kind of attracted to that in a way, and in any sport, of having a team that can be at the top and stay at the top. And I think it is encouraging in another aspect, from, you know, in contrast to last year, to say it is possible in a league that's built around parity, that talks about, you know, a salary cap league, that there is a way for teams to come out and sort of have, you can build a dynasty in a league like this. And I think sometimes you look at MLS and you say it's just not possible. It's, you know, there's so much parity and the salary cap and this and that. But then you see a team like LA and shows that they can do it.
Well, even this year, how strong, you know, they didn't make it this far, but how strong Kansas City and Real Salt Lake were. And despite losing players to the World Cup and other things, you know, they're still key competitors. And arguably next year, even though Donovan's leaving Los Angeles, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if both these teams are strong next year as well, because of that depth and because of the players are able to collect to, you know, to fill in roles where they don't have it, or to replace injured players during the season. And again, that's to me, you know, the MLS season, we've talked about this many times, but the MLS season, you know, we don't know if it's a, you know, our line is it's not a 100-meter dash or it's not a marathon, it's just a slog, right? And it's that combination of having enough depth throughout the season, and then once you get into the playoff, have enough quality so that you win these one-off playoff games. And I think both these teams showed that throughout this year.
I think for me, a couple of things. In the case of New England, I think it shows that more markets that aren't really known for caring about soccer are maybe starting to care about it a little more. We saw that last year. I think we can safely say Real Salt Lake and Sporting Kansas City are now two markets that are really into soccer, whereas in years past, if you looked at those markets, they're probably into American football or whatever sports they're into. I think you look at New England, I think they do have a soccer history of some sort, especially in Boston, but you know, Robert Kraft never really cared about the Revolution at all, and I think them getting this far might show him, you know, you have something here, it's being built the right way finally, you got to a final, you almost won a trophy. I mean, there's something there.
Get out of Gillette Stadium, please.
Yeah. Although to his credit, he was willing to pay the $2.5 million or so for the salary for Jones Wednesday added. And that was another point we were talking about during the game. You know, this notion of signing a DB player to help your team once you filled out your main core of your team, right? You know, traditionally, or at least what you're told is the plan for the MLS is to find a DB player and to build the rest of the team around it. Where arguably, you know, especially in this case with New England, it's almost smarter to have the key players and then be able to bring in that DP player to put you over the top. And I think that's very valuable.
And then the other thing, when you look at LA Galaxy, I think it's the point you touched on about the dynasties, but I'm going to come at it at a different angle. Now I think it's confirmed everybody hates the LA Galaxy except for LA Galaxy fans. I tweeted something before, maybe a couple of days before the final started, and I'm like, what's the perfect like hip hop album cover for this MLS Cup final? And it was the Snoop Dogg album cover that recently came out that said LA versus everybody. And I think that's perfectly fitting for this. Nobody likes the LA Galaxy, and that's a great thing for MLS. And then you're going to have expansion teams come in like New York and Orlando, and they're already going to be geared to build their teams to beat the LA Galaxy.
I think that's, I just think it's, you know, when you think of all major sports, there's the perennial team that you know, obviously the bandwagon fans will jump on those teams. But I think people who really are into the sports or into their local team or local club will hate them more than anything. And I think that's an important part of sports.
I don't know where that puts me because I'm a fan of the LA Galaxy.
Well, I guess LA Galaxy fans and you versus everybody.
Well, again, I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but you know what? Like, I respect the LA Galaxy.
How can you not like that?
I mean, I like Bruce Arena. And you can see, like, I have respect and admiration. And admiration for what they've been able to do there. I think that's the bare minimum that you can offer them. I'm not a fan of their, I don't wear any of their gear, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I guess it's a respect thing, but for you two, but for me, it's a hatred. I'm not a big fan of any of them.
I'll give you that.
But moving on to, I guess, the final thing we're going to touch on, if you guys have anything to touch on about this, and that is the interview with Don Garber. He touched on Landon Donovan's impact on MLS. He touched on CBA stuff, and he touched on expansion. Is there anything you guys want to...
Well, he did. He said Canada once. We should really highlight that. That's very important. That at least he mentioned Canada once. I think he's learned.
I think he's learned
over the last couple of years that he has to say Canada at least once when he's on in halftime to make it seem like he actually gives a shit about soccer in Canada. Because I really don't think anyone believes that he does.
No, I would agree with that. I didn't think he revealed too much information. I thought the stuff he talked about was sort of, you know, standard. But, you know, I do think, you know, the interesting thing is this, you know, the growth of the league and in terms of how many teams is possible to be played and stuff like that. You know, my newest point of view is that, you know, MLS is copying the NSL model where they want the stars, where they want expansion teams because there's a lot of money to be made in expansion teams. It wouldn't surprise me in the next 30 or 40 years we have 32 or 34 teams in the league. And, you know, arguably, you know, the only counter argument I would say to that, why I think it's fine, is there is a lot of soccer players now in North America. And if you look at England, who has the pyramid of leagues, you know, there's 92 teams in England. England has, you know, if you count Canada and the United States, 1/7 of the population. And, you know, so I do think there's opportunities there.
Yeah, I think the only, maybe the only other thing I'd add is that the one interesting thing, though, is we kind of touched on it. You said it there, Aaron, was that, I mean, this is piggybacking. There was an interview this week with Don Garber on ESPN FC where the main criticism was that he really didn't say anything. I mean, they asked him a lot of questions, and he gave a lot of vague answers. And he seems to be, these days, really playing the role of a politician. You know, it reminds you of almost any politician you're seeing in North America these days, where they ask you ask them a direct question, and they just don't really answer it whatsoever. They'll say a lot of loosely veiled themes, but they won't actually give you a direct answer. And I thought, you know, again, in the halftime, he got asked some good questions. I thought Alexi Lawless had a pretty good question, which I think is obviously important for players in the league in terms of salary. And, you know, he answered it best that he could, but I don't think it really... I don't think it resonated. I don't think it really directly answered what they wanted. You know, he just kind of said, "Well, we'll deal with that when the CBA comes through. Don't worry. Like, don't worry. We understand those are the core of our league." But I don't think that's what Lawless was getting at. I think he really meant something a little more deeper, saying like, you know, these mid-level players like a Sam Cronin, who's like MLS, these MLS lifers, you know, are the core and guts of all these teams, or like a Chris Tierney, or maybe a Patrick Mullins. I mean, these are guys that are and so they're the guys that are sort of sitting there wondering, do I go off to Finland or Sweden or Norway and slog through there for a couple of years with complete flexibility to hop over to Denmark? And then from Denmark, I could hop over to the Netherlands. And by the time I'm in my late 20s, I could be making some pretty good money playing in exciting leagues.
Yeah, I know there's certainly issues with the league and stuff like that. And it'll be interesting to see how the, you know, one of the things is, and the problem with these sort of negotiations is it's always about money. And it'd be more interesting if it wasn't about money. You know, certainly the one thing that always irks me about the MLS is this point of option contracts, right? Where in regular soccer, a player 6 months before their contract runs out has the freedom to pick a new team. And part of that is because soccer season's the off season. They don't have a traditional off season like other sports where players are set to go to other teams. So, you know, that's one issue where I think, you know, even if the players are going to make $10,000 more, $10,000 less, that would be far more valuable to them then. So it'd be interesting. And again, I think it's almost more on the union side to see what their interests are and what their ambition is in terms of these negotiations.
And I think for me, what I took out of that whole discussion was the expansion thing. But from the perspective of before, Garber had the stance of, you know, if you're going to be an expansion franchise, you need to have your own stadium first. And then the New York City FC thing happened, and they're going to be playing in Yankee Stadium. With all these, with Atlanta and Miami and all these teams coming in, are you going to treat them like you treated New York? Or are you going to make sure they have stadiums first? That's my main thing that I took from that.
And yeah, and when they asked him about Miami, he says, "I don't even know either." I mean, that was kind of thing. That's a thing that sort of concerns me. And when he talked, when you brought up the NASL, and that was a part of that ESPN FC interview that they did, where they made a comment about the expansion fees being such an important part of the overall revenue of the league, and they said they made a comment with NASL, and he kind of made a joke that the NAS, what the NASL was, and how, you know, they were just randomly bringing in teams with no rhyme or reason. And I just kind of sort of thought to myself, you know, you have a team in Miami that you promised to that really doesn't, like, isn't really working out so far in a market that traditionally is very difficult for any sports team to succeed in. How is that any different? You know what I mean? It's like you're trying to make something happen in these markets that we saw, like, hockey go into and fail miserably, yet you think you can go in there and make something happen with a sport that's going to be third or fourth down the tier.
Yeah, and again, my only counter argument to that is that currently soccer is very controllable in terms of the amount of money it costs to run a team, and based on the success of Sacramento in USL Pro this year, it doesn't take a lot to make your team competitive. So, you know, one of the, if you're talking expansion to other sports, let's say bring new hockey teams in or bring new, you know, football teams or baseball teams in, there really isn't the players in those leagues or not playing in those leagues to come to that league and make the league equally as competitive. I think realistically, and, you know, all three of us would know this because we do follow a lot of local and non-MLS soccer, I do think there's enough players, at least for a few more teams, to make the MLS still competitive and at least give those cities a chance to have MLS soccer.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement on that. I don't really know how I'm going to wrap this thing up. But anyway, it was fun to be back doing Gaffer and Hooligan. I don't really know where it's going from here because, you know, life and work. If I could, I would do this every day, but I don't have that luxury. But I hope you guys enjoy this show, and please let us know your thoughts. You can tweet us directly at Kamal Hilton and at ENB Sports. You can leave a comment underneath this post on the RNO site, and you can find this podcast also on the War Room Sports Podcast Network and FastRadio.com. But before we go, you should also check out the other brands within the RNO family of podcasts. You have Ian Clark and Eastside Stand Up. He recently did a... I don't know, you're here. Why am I plugging it? Tell them what you recently did.
Oh, I did that. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, we did like a sort of like a fantasy president, fantasy GM podcast. Aaron was on it, just kind of wrapping up the end of the year with Toronto FC and kind of thinking what happened this year, what's going on in the offseason, what needs to happen in 2015. So I brought on a bunch of different voices to weigh in and give their opinions on the club that's still in transition for going into another season. We're hopefully a bit better than the last one.
Yeah, so check that out. You can also check out Steve Botcher on the RNO interview series. He interviews key figures within the game. You have the boys at From the Black Hole, Rob, Jeff, and Lars, bringing their unique style of coverage within Canadian soccer. And you also have Ours is the Fury podcast on everything NASL and Ottawa Fury. Before we go, where can they find you?
Oh, yeah, I'm at Clark RNO. Catch me there.
We already know. We already know where we can find you. And we already know where you can find me. Until next time, guys, cheers.